Hello, and welcome to No Free Lunch, the 29th episode in the Crossing Thin Ice podcast series, brought to you by Actuarial Risk Management. This is Dave Ingram, and I'm joined today, as always, by Max Rudolph. Today, Max is talking about the situations where investors find opportunities with returns that are higher, but where there is little or no history of past losses. The classic free lunch. Prior to the 2008 financial crisis, investors piled into the seemingly free lunch of the mortgage securities, and we all know how that ended up. By the way, nothing in today's podcast is intended to be investment advice. We are here to provide educational material. We hope that you also take advantage of our free newsletter and webcast for additional education on risk management topics. And you might notice that we have recently renamed our newsletter and webcast to bring them all under the Crossing Thin Ice banner. And now to you, Max. Let's get started.
The sign at the head of the path promises free lunch this way. Free lunches are generally hard to find, but lately, signs like this one have been popping up more frequently. Recent monetary and fiscal stimulus has inflated what some call an everything bubble. Today, we'll highlight areas in risk modeling, both assets and liabilities, that help build resiliency. For insurers, reflecting consistent methodologies and conservatism into their internal models builds resiliency and enhances solvency. In the late 1980s, the new asset class was junk or high-yield bonds. Spreads were in the hundreds of basis points, while historical defaults were in the dozens. As we know, it did not end well for concentrated owners of junk bonds. Then the 2000s, marked model accounting generated low capital requirements on complex, often collateralized or illiquid assets that were highly rated and derived from home mortgages. These securities failed to perform after promising large spreads and low defaults. The recent era of low nominal yields has seen investment managers reach for yield, assuming that adding risks like reduced liquidity leads to consistently higher returns. More risk, more returns. Isn't that what CAPM promises? Some are concerned that recently developed asset classes will follow this playbook, initially with big payouts, but eventually stressing a portfolio. History doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. It feels like a buy now, pay later scheme with models employed that don't always include the pay later part of the cycle. The lack of built-in redundancy increases the likelihood of asset defaults, causing cash flow problems for insurers. Your firm may be considering buying these new asset classes. How can a model align the potential risks with the promised returns when little historical data is available? The goal is to accurately predict future assumptions. Over long time horizons that cover a full cycle, covering credit, liquidity, and government stimulus, you can't have it both ways. There is, unfortunately, no free lunch. Financial models are used internally at insurance companies to manage the company, including exercises such as income statement projections and pricing. Using historical data would seem to leave little room for manipulation, and efficient market theory suggests that bubbles are theoretically impossible. But we continue to seek out a free lunch when we should instead be looking for consistent methodologies that align with company risk expectations. We model mortality with increasing complexity, including trends and mortality improvement factors, while an asset assumption like default charge has a simple level basis point charge, even though events like pandemics and recessions both occur periodically and impact net income in similar ways. We need to use consistent methodologies between risk and use narrative scenarios that require aligned assumptions. Some say it's different this time, but it's not. It is the risk manager's job to challenge so-called paradigm shifts that invariably revert back to prior norms. As the song says, sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Which sign will we follow? Assumptions in these models should reflect best estimates regarding the future. What methods will build resiliency for those who trust insurers with their savings? Principle-based methods align with narrative scenarios, allowing a holistic view of the quantitative results. This improves on rules-based methods that build conservatism into each individual assumption. Historically, insurers have become insolvent due to concentration of risk that goes bad, either small geographic concentrations covering health or property insurance, or going big on a specific asset class. It's important to fully reflect the asset risk in your strategy. Modeled investment strategies perform best when spreads and defaults reflect a full credit cycle. This can be difficult to implement when a new asset class has enjoyed early success. One person's reasonable statistical technique may be another's cherry-picked result. The challenge is to build out full cycle risks across at least credit and liquidity prior to the downside part of the cycle playing out. These new asset classes tend to be complex, making it difficult to test or challenge assumptions. Focusing on initial positive returns and ignoring assumptions calibrated over a full cycle may lead a model to reflect a free lunch or riskless profit. This methodology will work until it doesn't. Cycles eventually complete the circle. What becomes an asset crisis often starts off with excellent returns before a trigger event changes expectations and liquidity suddenly dries up. Common sense is in the eye of the beholder. Conservatism can only be verified in hindsight. In this environment, conservative modelers can lose business, and if things go sour, aggressive modelers say it was just bad luck. An insurer should internally strive to model risk levels more conservatively than the floor required by regulators. What can those modeling a block of business do to ensure solvency under plausible adverse scenarios? For example, why do houses built in forests known to be tinderboxes overdue for a major fire event have to wait until historical data proves rates should increase, especially when reinsurance premiums already reflect this? Why are rising tides in Miami not driving flood premiums and mortgage rates up? Modelers should use common sense to model an unknown known, where historical data may not be predictive. Disclosure and transparency are key for internal use. Some examples from the past that may rhyme with future situations include pandemic risk, junk bonds, aggressive asset ratings, combinations of emerging risks, and bubbles created by government stimulus. Historical investment and liability data should be looked at critically and at times adjusted. Change in the world of finance is accelerating, and climate change as a threat multiplier changes the relationship between assumptions. The best analysts will revert to first principles rather than relying on rules of thumb. Beware of risk concentrations and aggressive assumptions that seem too good to be true. The definition of credible data should be expanded to allow anticipated changes to historical data. Disclosure of data that conflicts with market-driven practices should be encouraged, including future mean reversions, trends, or tightening of government policy. Modelers, risk managers, actuaries, and investment professionals should work together to build the appropriate level of conservatism, disclosure, and transparency into the process. Some modelers will follow the signs, expecting a risk-free profit, following the path until it suddenly falls off into the abyss. There they see another sign. It says, "There is no free lunch. Build resiliency and survive."
Are you challenged to meet your need for actuaries? Actuarial Risk Management can help. ARMS Data and Modeling Institute, or DMI, is a team of talented and experienced modeling actuaries working with an extensive bench of senior consultants. ARMS will partner with you to shift all or part of your actuarial and modeling needs to the DMI at a significant cost savings without sacrificing integrity. Contact ARMS today about how the DMI's modeling evaluation services can help position you and your company for tomorrow's challenges.
Max, let's start at the beginning here. No free lunch. What's that got to do with anything? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. What I found was that back in the 1800s, likely goes back to ancient Babylon or further, that taverns would offer a free meal to drinkers to keep them around. And we see that today where casinos offer free drinks to gamblers. And it's really anything to keep the customer in the building and encourage those high margin transactions.
You say no free lunch, but do you really mean none? No, never?
I talk about new asset classes with high spreads but little historical experience, so low or no default so far. History shows that the wisdom of crowds is true, and defaults lag but eventually validate those high spreads. So modelers need to be aware of this and anticipate future defaults. Some will say diversification can be a free lunch, to answer your question directly, where the reduction in capital due to spreading risk provides that equal returns with lower risk or higher returns with the same risk. But in my experience, the marginal risk being brought in with those additional potential risks is not really understood as well as the original risk internally. So something is missed. So Dave, I suggest relying on your mom for a free lunch and not the markets, with the added benefit that rather than payment, she may ask for a hug in return.
Yeah, okay. Within this story then, have you seen specific cases like this that have led to insurer insolvencies?
Yeah, I did a project a few years ago where I reviewed the insurance industry going back many years for insurance companies that didn't survive. And the ones that went under either were concentrated geographically in a specific line, often health or P&C, or else had an asset concentration in a new asset class like junk bonds. My advice is to consider those new asset classes, but initially only in moderation. So when you have something brand new, you don't go 100% in it right away. You take your time to learn it and make sure that you have the confidence that you understand it.
Well, Max, you sort of run down a little bit, or at least throw some skepticism on the idea of using historical data. Why do you think that historical data comes up short in these cases?
Well, historical data is not always predictive. Think of wildfire risk in California or hurricane risk in the Florida Panhandle, for example. These risks are evolving and they don't trend smoothly. Those of us on this call are old enough to remember Donald Rumsfeld. And I looked it up this morning. It was actually 20 years ago. It was 2002 in his famous press conference. And you can watch it on YouTube if you aren't familiar with it. And I encourage those who haven't seen it to watch it. But Rumsfeld, who was Secretary of Defense at the time, but had a long history as a politician before that. But he talked about knowns and unknowns. And we all laughed at his defense speak, but I soon realized that I understood what he was saying and that he was right, you know, talking about these things. He spoke of a 2x2 grid of knowns and unknowns. Most famously, he talked about known knowns, historical data that's predictive, which, of course, that's the actuary's sweet spot. And he talked about unknown unknowns, which are Taleb's black swans. What he did not discuss was something called unknown knowns. And so I've spent some time looking at that and trying to get my own feel for it and doing some writing about that part of that grid. And so what it means is that if I have historical data, so that's known, but it doesn't represent the future, meaning that something's going to change or is already changed so that I can't just use it verbatim, then the future assumption is an unknown known. And today we see that in many climate change driven assumptions like wildfires, droughts, you know, rainfall amounts, things like that. But this carries into our products through healthcare usage, you know, where we're more likely to have high heat and go to the emergency room because of that, things like that. Property damage, I think that speaks for itself, where homes will burn down or be flooded. And even taxes, as regions and cities and states and countries try to deal with these damages, and as we try to mitigate that risk. So all asset classes are going to be impacted by these changes as well. So think about it as an example. Are you investing in 30-year assets in Southern Florida? You might want to think about that and think about what the potential repercussions are. I think personally that the unknown knowns is really the most interesting part of our job.
All right, Max. Well, I hear your story about no free lunch. What concerns you specifically about that in today's environment?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I worry about complex assets that require a lot of effort to understand and model. I recently attended a presentation where the yield on a leveraged loan was double digits and the default rate only a few basis points. It just didn't make sense to me. If I can't understand why the spread is so high relative to the default charge, that means I don't understand the asset and I don't buy it. These types of assets are part of the concern regulators and other stakeholders have stated recently against private equity firms. These shadow banks are very sophisticated, but many have not experienced the downsides of a cycle for certain asset classes. You've probably figured out that I'm rarely a first adopter. How about you, Dave? Do you see opportunities of money for nothing or want to share a concern?
Oh, wow. Well, the main thing that comes to my mind talking about a free lunch is cryptocurrencies as an investment. I'm sure it's not the kind of thing you were thinking about, Max. It's pretty much the opposite of investment in my mind. There's no underlying value, so any return that you get from investing in crypto is money for nothing. Even the most risky stocks grant the holder of the stock an interest in the residual value of the company should it be dissolved. On the other hand, crypto is very risky, so it's not a return without a risk. It's just a return without any underlying business activity. So that's why I think of it that way. This situation is of particular concern to risk managers, who are responsible for adding up the risks of the firm. Those extra basis points that appear to be a free lunch are likely the market's recognition that there is a risk somewhere, however remote, that the opportunity could blow up. Risk managers need to look those situations directly in the eye and figure out why the market is paying that extra spread. We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of Crossing Thin Ice, presented by Actuarial Risk Management. If you found it valuable, please like, subscribe, and share with your colleagues. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Now we want to tell you about ARM's ERM Advisory Services. Our ERM Advisory Team, led by Dave Ingram and Max Rudolph, is available to provide a wide range of support to your enterprise risk management program. For example, we provide ERM training and education for insurer boards, executives, risk management staff, and general employees. The Crossing Thin Ice series of newsletters, webcasts, and podcasts, which you just listened to, are examples. A full range of ERM topics are available for presentation in person, live via webcast, or delivered as a recording for general ERM education or advanced training. And we can adapt our material to align with your existing or planned ERM approach. You can even mix and match, reserving us for a day or more with time split between education and risk discussions. We are happy to discuss your situation and how we might provide you with the help that you need to move forward, drawn from our decades of experience working with insurer ERM programs.